On October 7, 2012, over 200,000 spectators crowded the dramatic landscape near the Mount Panorama Circuit in New South Wales, Australia, for the 50th running of the Bathurst 1000. Over the past five decades, the Great Race had become a vital part of the fabric of Australian motorsport, by extension, Australian culture. Against the V8 soundtrack echoing across the challenging mountainous terrain, the Bathurst 1000 has given us some of the best racing and most iconic cars in the history of the sport. How did the Bathurst 1000 change Australian motorsport? How has one event given the racing world everything from V8 supercars to the R32 GTR known as Godzilla? And what about it has made it a cultural icon? Well, today on Past Gas, it's the history of the Bathurst 1000.
The Bathurst 1000, mate.
Oh, you're wicked, mate. I'm racing in the Bathurst 1000.
Past Gas Podcast. It's about cars, it's not about forts.
The Bathurst is the reason that the GTR is known as Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Australian press was a little racist, maybe? And this Japanese monster showed up and just started killing everybody. Mm-hmm. And it won so much that they started referring to it as Godzilla.
Because they only know one reference from Japan.
Well, there's one. I mean, there's a lot of Japanese monsters to be
kaiju.
Yeah. I'm not super versed in anime, but just based on the limited art I've seen, lots of monsters.
They got a lot of ghosts over there.
Ghosts.
That will trick you in different ways.
No. Yes.
Isn't there like a crawling guy that has an eyeball?
Yes, I was
going to
say the eyeball guy.
Yeah.
There's the water ghost, which is what Ringu is based off of.
Oh.
Yeah. Which is a drowned, scorned woman.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
Like La Llorona.
Hell hath no fury.
Oh, wait, she drowned her kids, right?
La Llorona did.
Yeah.
So every culture
we know our monsters.
Ghosts. Yeah. But a lot of monsters that they could have chosen from, they chose Godzilla. A little obvious, but sick name.
It's a little on the
sick
nose.
Name.
Yeah. A little on the nose. Anyway, welcome to Past Gas, everybody. My name is Nolan Sykes. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, James Pumphrey, across from me.
Get her done.
What was that?
I just made it up. It's because I saw GTR.
Oh,
when I see GTR,
Jitter.
I think, get her
put
done.
That on a t-shirt. Put that on some bumper stickers.
Yeah, put that on some bachelor-themed stew.
Let's go to war with Iraq.
Okay.
And Joe Weber, what's up?
What's up, Wing Wing Nation?
He's back.
He's back from France.
And we discussed that on our new podcast, The Big Three. Check that out. You've probably seen it in the feed for this show.
Yeah.
But now it's got its own feed.
Got its own feed.
Go follow that feed. Big
Just
three.
Like a grown-up horse.
Yeah.
That's right.
This is now the number two automotive podcast in the world.
Yeah, formerly the number one automotive podcast
in the world.
We got booted down.
But good news, though.
The Big Three is now the number one automotive podcast on the planet.
Yeah.
Go check it out. You'll like it. It was
really
fun.
If you're one of the people that comments too much jokes, too much funny stuff, don't listen to that podcast because it's a lot of chatter.
It's a lot of jokes.
It's a lot of funny stuff.
Usually I save notes for the post episode notes session that we have where we all give each other notes. But Joe, I want to thank you because I think it was really good that you told people not to listen to the other podcast.
Yeah. Well, like restaurants in LA when they don't have a sign.
Oh, yeah.
It's just going to drum up more mystery.
Oh, yeah. Get
interest.
Some buzz. Yeah. This is like the podcast version of not allowing ketchup.
Interesting.
There's a restaurant called Father's Office in LA that is famous for a burger and they don't have ketchup.
Not
they
even for
won't
fries?
Allow it.
No. They, if you ask, they go, no.
What do they put the fries in? Other
like
sauce?
An aioli.
Aioli?
Yeah, like a garlic aioli.
Yeah, oh, that's pretty good.
It's fine. It's not freaking ketchup.
Yeah.
That's no ketchup.
Also, ketchup's like a good sauce. There's nothing inherently trashy
about
it.
It is, but I think people like it just because it's sweet.
Good?
It's just
it's
sugar.
No, it's tomatoes.
That's
yeah, but
sweet,
it's
James.
Just jam.
It's pretty sweet.
It's tomato jam. What is garlic aioli? Garlic mayonnaise?
Yeah.
Tomato jam is way classier than a garlic mayonnaise.
When you put it like that, maybe they should not offer ketchup, but a bespoke tomato jam.
Yeah. If someone was like, hey, have you met James Pumphrey? They'd be like, yeah, dude, he's a jam. I'd be sick. Yeah. But if someone's like, oh yeah, he's mayonnaise. Yeah. I'd be like, oh my God, I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I agree.
Yeah. Jam.
Jam. Tomato jam.
Oh, yeah. There's a massive fly.
If you don't like ketchup, I say get off your high horse.
Yeah.
Let's go to Australia, where they love Vegemite.
The Bathurst 1000 traces its origins back to the Armstrong 500, a 500-mile endurance race that was first held at the Phillip Island Grand Prix Circuit in Victoria, Australia, on November 20th, 1960. The race was billed as the world's premier saloon car race and was designed to be an endurance and performance test of cars straight off the showroom floor. Early rules were simple and a bit loose, okay?
Okay.
All right. Quote, what are they?
Hey, mate.
Elongate.
Ancient car must be available as in a showroom somewhere in Australia, you
It's charming down
it's
there.
It's charming down there. Doesn't mean the same thing as it does here.
Simply put, if an identical model was available for purchase at any dealership in the country, you could race it.
I think that's sick.
I love it.
FD cars in Japan used to have to be street legal.
That's really cool.
Yeah. I think that's so sick.
I think
cars get too far away.
We need that.
I don't want a car that kind of looks like a street car. I want a street car
that can do crazy shit.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
Love that.
Like F1's great. Super
cool. Put a license plate on
it. I'm saying, but we covered in another podcast episode, like Group 5 almost became the premier racing sport. Yeah. It was like Group 5 or F1 at one point. It was between the two. And Group 5 is based on street cars.
Mm, yeah.
To me, that's way cooler. I don't look at any F1 car from the early 80s and I'm like, I'm going to buy one of those and make it look like that.
I'm going to go
like,
down to the Alpine dealership and get myself a... Mm-hmm.
I have a limited imagination. I like to imagine my little tuchus in there.
All right. So for the Armstrong 500, the cars were divided into five classes based on engine capacity. And at the end of the race, class winners were declared and awarded prize money, cash. Although no rules existed to crown an overall winner for the first event, the general consensus is that victory went to one Frank Code and John Roxburgh, who drove a Vauxhall Cresta in the 2001cc to 3500cc D-Class.
D-Class, which I assume stands for donut class.
Vauxhall's parent company, General Motors, was hardly thrilled with the good showing. According to Frank Code, they considered racing bad business and didn't want the Melbourne dealership they represented to be involved in the race. And within a few years, though, GM would be clamoring podiums.
People don't want fast cars. Hey, if there's one thing people don't like, it's fast cars.
Well, we got to remember, this is only 5 years after the, like, manufacturer motorsport ban, soft ban. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to be associated with people dying so much.
I didn't consider that.
Which now companies don't mind so much.
They don't. The Armstrong 500 was held at Phillips Island for two more years and steadily grew in popularity. But at the end of the 1962 race, the event organizers had a little problem. The already crumbling track had been destroyed from the event and needed a total resurfacing. To complicate matters further, the bridge connecting the island to the mainland wasn't strong enough to withstand the vehicles and equipment needed to complete the project.
That's a problem.
That's a little chicken and the egg problem right there. Yeah. Cost estimates soared, and event organizers began to look for a new home for the race.
Wait, quick question.
Well, yeah.
Phillips Island is not where they have the Australian GP. That's Albert Island?
That's Albert Park.
Albert
is where
Park.
They have the Australian race now.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That's in Melbourne.
Melbourne.
I've heard of this place, though, Phillip Island.
Phillip Island is where they invented the screwdriver. It's like they were like, they had to fix a car and a flathead that kept slipping out.
Couldn't do it.
And they were like, hey, what if we added another, made it a little crust?
Yeah. I do believe that they race at Phillip Island these days.
Oh, so it got resurfaced.
I think so.
It got resurfaced since the 70s. Maybe they built a new bridge or a ferry system. If you know, let us know.
Yeah.
PassGas@donutmedia.com.
Well, they're flush with cash on their new screwdriver invention.
Yes. Yeah, they made so much money off their screwdrivers.
In search of that new home, they landed on a beautiful 3.8-mile stretch of road over 400 miles away in Bathurst, New South Wales. Located on the side of a mountain with the same name, the Mount Panorama Circuit was the brainchild of Bathurst Mayor Martin Griffin, who had managed to secure funds from a Great Depression's public works program in the mid-1930s to construct what he pitched as a scenic public road outside the city. But Griffin had an ulterior motive back in the day, okay? He was a diehard racing fan, and having seen the success of a street circuit in the nearby town of Vail, was committed to bringing racing to Bathurst.
That's fun.
It was obvious from the moment that construction began that Griffin was building more than just a scenic drive. While overseeing construction, he insisted the laborers make the turns wider than they were designed. And at one point, Griffin and other local officials even posed for a photo with motorcycle racers Don Bain and Stanley Woods at the construction site. The road was finished in 1938, but from the beginning, periodic road closures had transformed it into Griffin's racetrack vision. That's awesome.
Yeah.
By the end of its first year, it had hosted the Australian Tourist Trophy motorcycle event and the Australian Grand Prix, and played host to several annual events over the next few decades.
That's like fun corruption.
Yeah, that's super fun. That's just taking advantage of a situation.
Yeah.
Fun corruption. The track quickly developed a reputation as formidable thanks to its narrow, steep, and fast design. As cars became larger and more powerful over the years, the track's difficulties seemed to scale accordingly. But with the arrival of the Armstrong 500 in 1963, it would soon become known as one of the best and most difficult races in motorsport.
The intense brand rivalries and a feverish devotion by fans that define today's Bathurst 1000 began the year the Armstrong 500 was held at Mount Panorama.
Oh, from the beginning.
Okay. A Ford Falcon had taken the checkered flag the year before, and its success was heavily publicized. Ford's primary sales rival, GM-owned Holden,
heard of it,
realized the marketing potential of the event and was determined to get in on the action in 1963.
So GM owns Holden as well as Vauxhall? Okay. Yeah.
For 1963, unbeknownst to GM, back in Detroit, Holden created a showroom-ready vehicle called the EHS-4 to comply with the 100-car homologation rule to compete in the event. Launched in August 1963, the S4 had several changes to the standard EH platform, including a blueprinted and balanced 120 horsepower 2.9-liter inline-six, a strengthened transmission, better brakes, a better drive shaft, and a shorter final drive ratio to help it climb the steep hills of Mount Panorama. Little did Holden know, they had just established the blueprint for the future of the Australian performance scene.
So this S4 is giving me like Ford Fairlane, vibes.
Fairlane or Falcon.
Yeah.
Definitely very similar to a, think of a GM Falcon. And that's probably
what they were aiming for. All thanks to the desire to conquer Ford at Bathurst. But Holden wouldn't be able to topple Ford just yet. Ford took the victory at the first Bathurst event, and the seeds of the race's defining rivalry were planted. We've talked about Holden versus Ford before in episode 194. Check that out if you haven't.
Let's boost those numbers, baby.
Boost those numbers, that archive.
We were just babies back then.
Yeah, barely even babies. Ford continued to claim victories for the next few years with its Cortina GT1500 and the driving prowess of team drivers Harry Firth and Bob Jane.
Great names.
If you're not Firth, you're last.
Between the two drivers, Ford won every Bathurst event from 1961 to 1965, Bathurst its first legend status drivers. Holden was still playing catch-up, and when Ford was finally taken down in 1966, it wasn't by Holden, but a Mini.
What?
Yeah. I've seen videos of this.
Tell me about it.
Well, films.
Films.
Films converted into video. They were shot on film, but I didn't sit down with a projector and watch them.
No.
I saw them on the internet. Saw them on the tube.
Okay, thanks for clarifying.
I saw them on the tube.
Gotcha.
But they're from the 60s.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The race had exploded by 1967. A grid of 60 cars with tons of international representation, including Alfa Romeo, Audi, and Datsun, had arrived to take up the challenge. By this point, the name of the race had changed several times based on sponsorship, but the location itself had become more iconic than any sponsor could hope to be. So the race had become colloquially known as the Bathurst 500.
Nice.
1967 also featured a rule change crucial to the future of the race. That year, a rule required a minimum number of pit stops to be implemented, which enabled the larger V8-powered cars, once considered too cumbersome and inefficient for the race, to seriously compete. Hmm. So those things guzzle gas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They have to stop for gas more.
Yeah.
So they made a rule that no matter how much gas you're guzzling, you had to stop a certain amount of time.
Makes sense.
Which allowed these V8 cars to compete with more efficient cars.
Not
became,
sure.
Became a power race versus an efficiency race. Sounds like some lobbying was involved.
Yeah.
When Harry Firth and Fred Gibson's 289 cubic inch V8 powered Ford Falcon XR GT took the checkered flag, that thing's sick.
Oh, yeah. Love that paint scheme.
Uh-huh. Little did they know that the race had been changed forever. Ooh. Holden responded to Ford in 1968 with a V8 powered car of their own, the HK GTS 327
Monaro.
And finally secured a much needed and long awaited win.
Monaro story.
This is one of the iconic Australian racing cars
Yeah, this thing rules.
It's a coupe. Holy shit.
If you played Forza Horizon 3, you probably unlocked it.
For almost the next two decades, Ford and Holden V8 cars would dominate the front of the pack at the Bathurst race, and this back-and-forth battle would create one of the most intense rivalries in all of motorsport.
Motorsport.
Jimmy and I had a little bit on Friday where it's an Australian guy who's obsessed with Hanna-Barbera cartoons.
Hanna-Barbera.
Hanna-Barbera. Oh, I love that. Bonnie Rubble, mate.
Oh, mate. Penelope Pitstop.
Yeah. Muttley. Oh.
Aye.
Oh, those
are right, bogey.
A mystery machine. They're always looking for ghosts and such, isn't it?
Scooby, too.
Scooby. Oh, I love that Scoob. And his little brother, Scrappy. Cousin, really. You know, sometimes you talk to people and they have an accent and you fall into it a little bit.
A little bit.
But it's very appealing, specifically with the Australian
accent.
That's
an empathetic response in your brain to mimic them, to make them feel more at home, but it comes off as
condescending.
Mocking. Yeah.
We'll get right back to it, but first, a few commercials. In 1969, the Australian Touring Car Championship, or ATCC, switched to a series format rather than a single race, with the Bathurst 500 as the crowning event. But the Bathurst 500 had begun to grow into something bigger than the race itself. Ford and Holden's on-track successes were translating into increased sales and were informing the kinds of performance cars built in Australia, giving way to the phrase, win on Sunday, sell on Monday. These homologation cars were often referred to as Bathurst specials and were the cars to own in the Australian car scene.
I think I bought some of that Bathurst special off of a Twitch streamer last year.
Gamer Girl Bathurst special.
Nice. But it wasn't just the cars that had cultural influence. No, this new V8 era also gave rise to a number of hero status drivers, such as Ford driver Alan Moffat, and legendary Holden driver Peter Brock, who we coincidentally covered in episode 186. Did he have the box full of crystals?
Yeah, he's the crystal
hell
guy.
Hell yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God, great episode. Go listen to that. The successes of and rivalry between these two drivers created legions of fans. It intensified the brand rivalry and made the outcome of Bathurst all the more important.
Speaking of baths, I'm drinking a hop water.
Yeah.
And I just burped. Like I just burped and it smelled like a towel.
How often do you guys change your towels?
Change my towels? I'm embarrassed to say. I use a new towel every day.
Every day?
Yeah. Whoa.
Whoa.
Yeah, every shower.
Well, you don't want to get ringworm. I get it.
Riley wrestles.
Yeah.
Riley's an Olympic wrestler. Yeah. So.
Fair enough.
I don't want to mix her towel up with mine.
See, that's what you can do when you have a washing machine at your house.
I do.
Yeah.
You can just do that.
There's always a load of towels going on.
I bet.
I think I'm about
four showers before I
switch it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
You need to step your game up.
I don't have a washing machine.
That is next house. You got to get one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Dude,
it's
life changing.
It's literally number one on my list.
Yeah. It's life changing.
Yeah.
It's just, I didn't have, I had like a combo one in my last apartment.
Those suck.
And it was useless.
Yeah. So, do you want like poorly washed, poorly dried stuff?
Do you want
to take 4 hours?
Yeah. You want to take 4 hours to have wet clothes?
Yeah.
It's awful.
Sign me up.
But I did start just taking my stuff to the laundromat, which you can afford.
I do occasionally.
No, but like drop it off.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the fold and fold.
Yeah. Fluff and fold. It's like they charge by the pound.
Yeah.
Even if you don't get it all, just get some of it.
Yeah. And you've That's got a bunch of those sheer Under Armour shirts
all your
that
Under
weigh
Armour
nothing.
Shirts. Yeah, they weigh nothing.
Wardrobe idea. Okay. Write that down. Dude, that's a hack. For laundry? For like fluff and fold? Oh my. Yeah. Light, just the light. Lightweight clothing.
You got a lot of mesh.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, dude.
Okay.
It's $4.
It's like an hour and a half to do all this
bushel
shit.
Of clothes.
Fill it with a bunch of, like, just stack all your clothes around a bunch of helium balloons. You're like the smoky eunuch of fluff and fold.
I've done that at Whole Foods where I made a really heavy salad and then just like kept my finger on it at the scale.
Hey, the rule really book's just a suggestion.
Yeah.
All right. So there's a lot of rivalry, like fervor building around this race, but there was also some backlash. In the early 70s, a so-called media panic began over the Bathurst specials, with interest groups lobbying to ban the 160-mile-per-hour supercars on our roads. But nothing could seemingly stop its growth in popularity. It was soon considered to be the most important event in all of Australian motorsport and was beginning to be referred to as
the Great Race.
Then, in 1973, the race adopted a format that remains largely unchanged to this day.
Whoever goes fastest wins.
The rule requiring all cars to be stock production cars had been lifted for a number of years. And in 1973, the Confederation of Australian Motorsports, or CAMS, implemented Group C, quote, big banger regulations for touring cars across all of ATCC, outlawing highly modified class cars in favor of mildly modified touring cars.
Fun.
Yeah.
Big banger.
Fact. That's a big banger.
That's a big banger.
In addition, CAMS mandated 7 pit stops and the use of co-drivers for the first time, and required them to complete at least 54 laps. But the most important change that year came with increasing the race's length. Sources differ on why the increase was implemented, with reasons ranging from a demand for more racing to an impending countrywide switch to the metric system. Either way, the race was extended from 500 miles to 621 miles, or 1,000 kilometers, and has been since known as the Bathurst 1000.
That's not a crazy switch.
Nah, that's all right. Perhaps the most well-known Bathurst 1000 from the 70s was the 1977 event. Moffitt was seeking his third ATCC title and was financing a Ford operation on his own after Ford withdrew official support from the race. Moffitt had got his Falcon out to a sizable lead before handing the reins over to his co-driver, Le Mans champion Jackie Ickx.
That guy's everywhere.
He really is. Like every other episode we mention him. During his stint, Ickx pushed the car and its brakes to the limit, and by the time Moffitt got the car back, the brakes were beginning to fail.
Have fun, mate.
I wonder if they probably had disc brakes in the front at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moffitt held the lead.
77?
Yeah, definitely. They probably did. Yeah. Moffitt held the lead even as the brakes faded to the point of uselessness. Finally, with only 12 laps to go, the brakes were gone. Moffitt nursed the Falcon around the track using engine braking to slow down.
That's crazy.
His teammate Colin Bond, who was in second with a distant lead on third, eventually caught Moffitt. And on the last lap, the two drove side by side, a full lap ahead of the third place Holden A9X Torana, and crossed the finish line in tandem for a historic 1-2 finish.
Dude, driving Bathurst with no brakes, especially that first downhill double kink turn.
Yeah, that's
that would be terrifying.
That'd be scary. As past gas listeners like yourself, if you listen regularly, might remember from our Holden and Ford episode, by 1980, a new driver named Dick Johnson became Ford's latest cult hero. Ford entries were still not supported in this era, and Johnson entered the 1980 Bathurst 1000 in a self-funded effort. While lead of the race, he was spun off track and ran over a large rock, forcing a retirement. He later asked for help in financing another effort on TV, and the Ford fans answered. The next year, he returned in a fan-financed Ford Falcon XD and took first place at Bathurst and won the ATCC.
It's like when Zach Braff crowdfunded a movie.
Yeah.
When he had enough money to make his movie.
But the undisputed king of the mountain was and still is one Peter Brock.
Crystal Man.
Crystal Man.
Crystal Man. I love that he's so weird.
He's a weird guy.
I love it. I love that he's so weird and like good. Though. Yeah. So you got to kind of be like, well, I mean, crystals power clocks. You know, so they got energy going on.
Yeah. They got something's happening. Definitely check out that episode.
Oh, your problem is you got too many ghosts in your car. It's eating up all your gasoline. What you need is a crystal in there.
In a box I made.
I wish Peter Brock was like my,
I made a special box for the crystals. The ghosts can't eat it.
What are you talking about?
I wish Peter Brock was my mentor.
From 1972 to 1984, Brock won the race a staggering 8 times, including a three-peat from 82 to 84. And today, Bathurst 1000 winners are awarded the Peter Brock Trophy, which is unfortunately not a box of crystals.
No, it's not, but there's a crystal. Legend has it, there's a crystal inside of it.
That'd be really funny.
Mm-hmm.
In this era, a V8-powered car only lost Bathurst once.
But there's been a lot of V8 cars that lost.
Yeah, yeah, as we'll get to.
Since 1967, of this era, a V8 car won every year but once.
Ah, there you go. Okay. There we go. The race had become a cultural force to the tune of Australian V8s, but big changes were on the horizon that would shake the 1000 to its core.
An upside-down horizon because it was in Australia.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
The sun in Australia doesn't rise and set. It sets and rises. Comes from the sky, and then it goes down like this, and then goes...
It goes back up again?
Because the sky... The sun lives in America.
Yes. Lives California.
California.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yep.
It's got a house in Malibu.
Yeah, a house in Malibu.
It's got floors made out of leather.
Yeah.
Just like Will Smith's house.
Will Arnett has a leather-floored gym.
That, for some reason, makes sense to me.
A leather-floored gym?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's sweat.
Yeah.
It's like either leather or rubber if you're a poor. But why not kill an animal to make your floor?
I mean, if you have a personal gym, you're not poor.
Yeah. Unless you have rubber floors.
Wrestling mats everywhere. We can all get ringworm now.
Yeah, let's all get ringworm. Ringworm 24. Let's everybody.
Ringworm 24. Bring it in, guys.
Ringworm 24.
Ringworm 24. Ringworm 24.
Bringing it back, baby.
Oh, I joke, but Riley did get ringworm last year.
Oh, from bath
from
towel?
From the gym.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
I got a ringworm when I was doing wrestling in
from
high school.
From yoga or something. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I made fun of her so hard.
I love you guys' relationship.
I didn't really. But it was weird.
It's a rash.
In 1985, the ATCC shifted its rules in order to align the World Touring Championship, WTCC, Group A regulations in order to bring the ATCC in line with the rest of the racing world and attract international participation.
Nice.
The 1985 Bathurst 1000 was a sign of things to come. For the first time since 1966, when the checkered flag was waved, it wasn't a Holden or Ford crossing the line first, but instead a V12 Jaguar XJS.
Oh, so okay, that's pretty finally sick. That sentence from before makes sense.
Yeah. Holden struck back in 1986, but the V8's days of absolute dominance were numbered.
Wow, let's go.
In 1987, the Bathurst 1000 officially became a race on the WTCC calendar, and regulations now favored turbocharged vehicles.
Huh.
Many fans were skeptical of deviating so far from formula and the cars that had defined the Australian motorsport.
Hmm.
Their reservations seemed all but fully realized when the King of the Mountain, Peter Brock, qualified a dismal P20 in his Holden Commodore.
Man.
Despite his tough start, Brock had an incredible race. The crystals were firing. And he finished third behind two Ford Sierra RS500 Cosworths.
Oh, wow.
That's and after fun. The Fords were found to have technical irregularities,
whoa,
they were disqualified. And Brock was handed his ninth and final Bathurst win. What a
stroke of luck that was. Wow. They didn't have their regulation crystals on board.
Yeah. Turbocharged Ford Sierras took the crown for the next 2 years. And despite a Holden V8 victory in 1990, many felt that the Bathurst 1000 and the ATCC had changed for the worse.
Oh, different things are winning.
Yeah, different aww things are. They're still, they're winning because they're faster.
Yeah.
Aww. Oh, Crimey River, Australian. Got an
issue. Here's rednecks a tissue.
Snowflakes.
They don't know what those are down there.
They don't. No. They don't have any snow.
They do
there
have snow.
They do?
Yeah. I was just reading this book called Power and Geography.
Okay.
And they talk a lot about how snow the mountains on the east side of Australia uh-huh have a lot of snow.
All right. Ooh. Well, I stand corrected. They know yeah what snowflakes so
they
are.
They know what those are.
So that burn works.
That's what these guys are.
That's great.
Yeah.
From there. In the first few years after the implementation of the new rules, the racing was actually slower.
Oh.
Oh. So we take it all back. <Well. laughs> You guys are right. You have a good reason to be upset. Slower racing. Immediately, we were proven to be dumb and mean.
We are mean.
We should look into stuff before we yeah pick sides. In Group A's first year, 9 of the cars that qualified in the top 10 under the old rules were faster than the fastest qualifying time under the new ones. Way faster.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hmm.
The discontent over the direction of the ATCC and by extension the Bathurst 1000 reached a fever pitch when the R32 Nissan Skyline GTR arrived in 1990.
Uh-oh.
The car failed to finish the 1990-1000, but as you might remember from our two-parter on the GTR or our banter at the top, after Australian racing team Gibson Motorsport revamped the car for the 91 season, it was all but unstoppable, earning itself the nickname Godzilla. The R32 cruised to victory at Bathurst in 1991 with a driving team of Gentleman Jim Richards.
Hey.
That could be an ironic nickname. We don't know.
Yeah.
And Mark Scaife, setting a race completion record of 6 hours, 19 minutes, and 14.8 seconds that would go unbroken until Nolan was born in 2010.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah. Follow the money. No such thing as coincidences.
Nope.
In 1992, the ATCC series governing body CAMS was well aware of the discontent felt by the fans and attempted to handicap the R32 with a ballast in the hopes Ford and Holden might be able to take down its crown. But the car had gotten even faster.
Womp, man. Womp. Sorry.
Sorry. Can't weigh down Godzilla.
Jesus Christ.
I suffer for my art. And now time to pay the bills. Afraid of another Bathurst victory from the Gibson team, CAMS forced the R32 to carry an even heavier ballast for Bathurst in 1992 in hopes that they could prevent it from spoiling the great race.
They should do that for Max Verstappen. Just have him
They should just make better cars. Everyone else just needs to make better cars. Yep. It's not the rules' fault that it's boring. It's everyone else.
They should have 4 extra wheels on his car.
Yeah.
You want to give him more grip?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ah, shit. I didn't think about that.
Great idea, Joe. Give him more grip.
And it's in the rules already. No.
But when the 1992-1000 began, it was clear the extra ballast was no use. Ford had qualified on pole, but by the end of lap 2, the R32 was in the lead. And by lap 18, it had an astonishing 20-second gap over the Ford team Sierra.
Oh, shit. Wow.
A short while later, it began to rain, and the R32's all-wheel drive system helped it extend its lead. The rain gradually worsened until the cars were navigating through a torrential downpour. And the R32 was the only car with windshield wipers on. One right after another, cars skidded off the track, forcing the safety car from the pits and erasing Nissan's lead. Fog started rolling in. Drivers later reported that visibility was so poor, they had to look at the lines on the side of the track to determine where they were.
Jeez.
Driver Neil Crompton reflected, straight out of Crompton, reflected, I caught the blur and an orange flash of fire at the corner of my eye. Two cars had collided and caught fire as I slipped by. It was like one of those dream sequences in a movie where time slows down and you can see everything going on around you as you pick your way through the chaos. It was truly frightening. My reference for Australian accents is the mechanic in Mad Max.
Yeah. Last of the big V8s.
Yeah.
Witness me.
After 4 hours of racing, they were barely halfway through the race. Driver Danny Holm had a heart attack driving down the Conrad Straight and was pushed to the hospital where he would later pass away. The weather eventually cleared for a short while and the track began to dry. A Ford Sierra driven by Dick Johnson had even managed to split the two GTRs with an impressive run into second place. But with around 20 laps to go, it started to rain again.
Oh, my God.
Out of the ground. That's how it does in Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. Fascinating how
it's
that
like
works.
It's like a sprinkler.
Yeah.
And then
they save a fortune on irrigation.
Yeah. So it comes out of the ground and then goes up into the sky and forms clouds, and that's where we get our rain.
I always wondered how that works.
It just drops right on us.
Wow.
Yep.
Thanks, Australia.
Yeah, and then it just circles back into the
ground.
Soil.
Yeah.
And then up out of the soil.
Makes
in Australia.
Sense.
That's why in Australia you can just drink rain right out of the ground because mm-hmm. it's filtered by the dirt.
You just Delicious. Aim your mouth down.
Yeah, aim your mouth down. Yep. Johnson drove into the pits to switch to wet tires. The leading R32, driven by Gentleman Jim, was on slicks and began to slide till finally colliding with a wall. Jim managed to get the car down the mountain and back toward the pits, but the rain was coming down so heavily that by the time he hit the Conrad Straight a few minutes later, there was standing water.
Wow.
On the straight, Jim hydroplaned off the track and collided with a group of cars that had met the same fate only moments prior. Wow. Johnson, on wet tires, stormed down the mountain, down the straight, and past the GTR with his fist raised out the window in victory.
Hey, now.
But the chaos was too much for race controllers. A red flag was waved, and in accordance with ATCC rules, those fun things, the race was reset to the lap before what? The race was over. Dude, at that point, just be like, it's over.
Yeah.
Like, you'd much... Oh, God.
Why would they do that?
They're dumb. The GTR had won again. It's like F1.
Yeah, it's a weird rule. I'm sure there's some reasoning for it.
Yeah, because that's probably... It's technically the rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At the podium ceremony, an angry crowd descended on the Gibson team and drowned the P3 Nissan drivers with booze. Throwing beer cans, big beer cans.
Big old Fosters.
They don't drink Fosters.
They don't drink Fosters. No. They don't even really sell it there.
No, they drink Weingummbik beer.
What?
I just saw an Australian lady at the airport. I met, talked to her for a little bit. Hmm. Talked about Koopa Petey.
Oh, yeah, the Opal Capital.
Well, we watched, we talked about Opal Hunters Australia.
Yeah.
And, Gold Rush Australia, all the Australian reality shows I watch.
There's a lot of like weird, what do they call them? There's like a term for the trucks that have like a million things. Like
land trains
that go to Cooper Petey.
Yeah.
They're always getting stuck.
Always getting stuck. Cooper Petey's so hot, you live in caves underground.
And it's like That's a tourist
sick.
Spot.
It's sick, yeah.
And there's like a million flies.
Uh-huh.
Ugh. Sounds like
But there's paradise. A lot of opal.
Yeah.
Love those.
Strike it rich. Strike it rich in the opal mines, mate.
Throwing beer cans at them as they were called to the podium. Driver Neil Crompton responded in kind and flipped off the crowd.
Nice.
Hell yeah, Neil.
Flipped them off, dude.
Dude, you, dude. I won. I won, dude. you, dude. I won, dear.
Dude, with your booze.
Your booze, dude. And behind the scenes, winning drivers Jim Richards and Mark Scaife were watching. Allegedly, Scaife began filling his suit with beer cans and told Richards, "F them, Jim. They're going to throw cans at us. I'm throwing them back,
Jim."
Jim implored Scaife to calm down, and when the two were called out to the podium, they were met with booze, beer cans, and angry fans chanting, "Bullshit!" When it came time for Richards to speak, the man, well-mannered enough to be nicknamed Gentleman, said to the crowd, "I'm just really stunned for words. I can't believe the reception. I thought Australian race fans had a lot more to go than this. I'll keep racing, but I tell you what, this is going to remain with me for a long time. You're all a pack of assholes."
Nice. Wow.
Richards and Scaife walked away from the podium to a chorus of more boos, and the Group A era of Bathurst was over.
Man.
Wow.
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
What a way to go out.
He handled it well.
Yeah.
He did.
You got to flip it on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I thought you were better than this.
Yeah. I thought you were better than this, but honestly, you're being an asshole. Yeah.
You're being an asshole. Arsehole.
Arsehole.
Arsehole. That's hard to say.
It is.
Regulations for the ATCC were changed so that the V8 cars that made the great race a cultural phenomenon were by far and away the favored cars to take the checkered flag. This new era produced iconic races for almost from the jump, including the 1995 event when Larry Perkins made an incredible last-to-first run from Perkins in 1995. That's insane. In 1997, the ATCC was rebranded to V8 Supercars, and the Bathurst 1000 adopted a 2-liter Super Touring Car Championship to rival the series. But the popularity of the V8s was unshakable. And since 2001, the Bathurst 1000 has exclusively been a V8 supercar race.
Yeah, HKS Monaro, mate.
Monaro, mate.
Historic moments from the modern era include Greg Murphy's Lap of the Gods in 2003 and a last-to-first win for Chaz Mostert and Paul Morris in 2014. And while the Ford vs. Holden rivalry that made up nearly the entire history of the Bathurst 1000 came to an end in 2020 with the death of the Holden brand, the rivalry carries on in spirit, with GM-owned Chevrolet taking the spot of Holden, and as a result, the GM-Ford rivalry is as intense as ever.
There's a sense of tradition and continuity. Continuity with the Bathurst 1000. Drivers have waxed poetically about the 161-lap Bathurst 1000 and what it meant to Australian motorsport over the years. But five-time winner Garth Tander perhaps said it best when he told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that competing at Bathurst was one of the pinnacles of Australian sport. When you drive into the town itself and you see that Mount Panorama sign, it always makes the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. On New South Wales' government's website, Bathurst is referred to as the spiritual home of Australian motorsport.
I mean, I think that's pretty true.
Hell yeah. This year, the 61st race held at the Bathurst circuit will be on October 13th. Mount Panorama remains a public road, and apart from the 6 weekends a year it's closed for racing, it's open for anyone to drive on it.
Are you guys thinking what I'm thinking?
You guys thinking what I'm thinking?
Crash my car at Bathurst. Yeah. Let's go.
Crash a rental at Bathurst. Do you have any 1967 Holden Monaros? Excuse me. I said on the website I would get a 67 Holden Monaro.
Sorry, mate. We're all out of them.
I got a Sentra.
Crashed one last Sentra. Week.
That is very fun and cool. Yeah. Australia is wild, man. Yeah. I love it there.
I can't believe we didn't talk about Garth Tander until the last paragraph.
Really? Garth Tander. We'll save Garth Tander to the end. Final quote. All right, we got some listener mail.
Hey, Pascas, longtime donut fan, donut underground member, and enthusiast of all things with wheels. I grew up in the Flint, Michigan area. My father retired from Buick City. Like many people of my generation, growing up surrounded by automotive history, it's always been an interest of mine. My other interest involves two-wheeled contraptions, oddly without motors. I'm not a typical cyclist, as I'm a big guy, but as I'm hammering out my miles on my bike, I worked my way through the entire podcast library of Past Gas with my headphones, and I went back for a second listen. It makes working towards a healthier life more enjoyable.
Hell yeah.
Let's go,
that's
buddy.
Awesome. Thank you for the commitment to automotive history and congratulations on earning number one automotive podcast.
Thanks.
Now it's number two, but still thank you. For your automotive history viewing pleasure, I've attached a picture of my bike along with the Flint River located in the former site of Chevy in the Hole, home of Plant 4, which played an important role in the 1937 sit-down strike.
Oh, nice.
We talked about that in one of the episodes. The site is now an amazing park with trails and green space. Thank you, Cody, a.k.a. the plus-size cyclist.
Nice, awesome. Dude. There's two things in that I love. One, getting out there.
Yeah.
Making a healthier lifestyle.
Absolutely.
Everyone that is on this podcast is a big fan of that. Mm-hmm. I've been committed to a healthier life. I've been running.
Nice.
I've been counting my cows.
You look great.
Thank you. If you guys want to see how great I look, check out our YouTube channel, Donut Podcast. Again, we are filming all of these now. Check us out on TikTok, Donut Podcast, and Instagram. We'll post clips. I also love beautification, making the cities look better. Lots of green spaces, more green spaces. Mm-hmm. So then we can have more active lifestyles.
Keep getting those miles, Cody.
Get those miles, Cody. Proud of you, dog. Very well written letter as well.
Yeah.
All right. So that's all we got this week. Make sure you check out our other podcast, The Big Three, every Wednesday. It has its own feed now. Anywhere you get your podcast, share with a friend. Share this cast with your friend. Word of mouth is still the best way to let people know about the guests.
The guests.
That was smooth.
Yeah. Go to Zoomies. Get yourself some donut apparel.
Yes, sir.
All right. Check these boys out on social. I love you.